Welcome to the Compliance Perspectives Podcast. I'm Adam Turtletaub from the Society of Corporate Compliance and Ethics and Healthcare Compliance Association. Joining us today from London is Ruth Steinholtz of ReadyWorks. Ruth's a compliance consultant, a regular speaker at our conferences. And Ruth, thank you for taking the time to talk to us today.
Thank you, Adam. Nice to be with you.
And nice to be, well, virtually with you time. So. Yeah. We're going to be talking today about the nexus of compliance and culture. And let me start with an observation from my advertising years. I mean, when I was in advertising, I would go to my various client sites, and I was always amazed by how different the cultures work. Even though in a lot of ways, all these organizations are very similar, you'd walk in the door and culture infused everything from how they made business decisions to, you know, what ties they worked, even what time people went to lunch every day. And it's not like somebody was laying down these kinds of rules. It's just what people did. So let me start by asking, what's your sense of how does culture get shaped?
Well, I think there are a variety of things, but let's start with an analogy to the way that children learn. So children learn by mimicking grown-ups, and people in organizations mimic their leaders consciously and unconsciously, and they tend to behave like they do. And of course, that's why it's so important in the ethics and compliance context that leaders set a good example. Even before I started working in cultural transformation, when I was GC and working as, you know, and a member of senior management teams, I noticed this. For example, at offsites, if there was a hotel with a gym, and the CEO or the team leader was in the gym or out running early in the morning or before dinner, you can bet that a lot of the team members would be doing the same thing. If, on the other hand, the CEO was more preferred the bar, then that's probably where everyone would be. So I think many things, but most of all, the values and behaviors of leaders and past leaders influence the culture of an organization. Sometimes you'll find that people don't even know why they're doing something in a particular way, because the reason is buried in the past and related to a previous leader, but nobody ever questioned it. The other thing is that the culture of an organization is shaped by the wider context. So the sector, for example, in defense and aerospace, you've got a lot of people who have a military background. In pharma, you may have a predominance of people with high academic achievement who are individualists. Engineering firms are shaped by the mentality of engineers, and law firms, as I know to my cost, both suffer and benefit from the way legal education is conducted. And then finally, there's a wider context, so country, culture, and language. For example, you always find that European subsidiaries of American companies are influenced very much by their U.S. parent culture. Whereas if you have, say, a Norwegian company or a company that's very Scandinavian or an Italian company, some of their aspects will be derived from the wider culture. And then you've got the political situation, the economic context, the situation, et cetera. So these are all things that contribute.
Given all this complexity of all these sort of strands coming together to shape the culture, it's obviously a very complex thing, but it can still fray. What have you seen as some of the warning signs as to when a culture is starting to go wrong?
So I like to think of it in terms of culture health versus culture risk. And the extent to which people are unhappy or disengaged in an organization is a pretty good predictor of culture risk, because they're going to be able to rationalize behaving badly. So the first thing I would look for example, is a blame culture. If there's a tendency for people to be blamed for mistakes, even if they're not fired because of it, but if there's a blame culture, this is a big warning sign. It makes it difficult to figure out what's really going wrong, because people are going to start hiding things. So you won't have an open culture where people feel that they can speak up, and you won't have that psychological safety that is so often spoken about as being important. Then I also look for things like, how do people talk to one another? Is it an abrasive environment? Do people shout at one another? Are there signs of disrespect? These are all warning signs, because they lead to people being disengaged. The other thing you would be looking for are the presence of fear-driven or anxiety-driven behaviors. So You know, are people doing things to get around problems? Are they afraid of different consequences? So all of these things are going to create a culture where people can do the wrong thing and rationalize it and are therefore warning signs.
Yeah, and going back to one of the things you said at the start of that answer, mm-hmm. when you talk about a blame culture, you know, we talk a lot about that there should be accountability. And I think too often that devolves into who do we blame for something versus, well, how did we as an institution let this go wrong or let this person go wrong? And then what do we do to make sure we fix it? It's a fine line there between, again, blaming, just looking for who do we blame versus how do we fix this thing. Now, how can compliance teams get leadership to focus on the culture when cultural issues start to arise?
Before I address that, can I just make a point? Because you make really good point about this line between accountability and blame. In order to have accountability, you have to have a just culture. So a just culture is a term of art from aviation safety. Basically, a just culture is a place where people do proper root cause analyses in order to figure out what really went wrong. And therefore, if somebody is punished or dismissed or whatever, it's because it's a just move. In other words, they acted either in a criminal way or intentionally, recklessly or something. In any other circumstance, that person wouldn't be punished. They would be helped to learn how to change what they were doing. And it wouldn't just be the person, because it's usually the wider organization that contributes when things go wrong. But to get back to, because it's such an important point, sorry, I wanted to get in there with that. But how I think compliance teams, the first thing I have to say is that they need to stop calling themselves compliance teams. I know you hate for me to say that, and I sound like a broken record because I've been saying it for years. But I think it's true, because if you want to have influence and be able to engage with leaders on the importance of culture, they have to feel that you have some expertise in that area. And if they just see you as compliance, then in their mind that may be associated with policies and procedures and investigations, et cetera. So you won't have the credibility needed to have a voice in the subject. Secondly, I think the way to engage leadership is to focus on the huge body and growing body of evidence regarding the importance of culture to the bottom line. So values-driven organizations are the most successful on the planet, you can say that. And if you engage with leaders in terms that they're interested in, i.e. what will make the organization successful, it should be easier to get their attention. So it's useful to know what's really important to the particular people that you're dealing with. If they're mostly financially driven, then use financial arguments. If they want to make a difference in the world, then you know, use those kinds of arguments. There's plenty of evidence to support either approach.
So obviously the leadership is very important, but who else in the organization do you need to have on board if you're going to attack a toxic culture?
Yeah, this is an important point, and I think one that people are recognizing more and more. You need to have a broad cross-functional coalition on this. You need to start with, if you've got an organizational development or a leadership development function, that's a really good place to start, or general HR. I think OD or organizational development they're usually the best people to get this, and you need to have alliances with them. But if you're in compliance separate from legal, you need to have those people on board as well, and any kind of sustainability people, because there's so many crossovers. And then the one that I think is really important and frequently there seem to be conflicts with is internal comms. Because the messages that they're sending out and you know, can actually be a problem if they're not aligned. The other person I found extremely useful when I did this first, for example, at Borealis, was internal audit, because they had a lot of credibility and knew all the different parts of the organization. So they were helpful for me understanding the culture in the different parts of the organization. But basically, there's hardly a function that isn't interested in or shouldn't be interested in creating a healthy culture. And of course, you need the senior leaders as well.
And so in addition to the people, are there other levers that can affect culture?
Well, yeah, I mean, there's external levers as well that can affect culture. There's, I think more and more regulators are interested in culture, depending on the industry. I mean, in the financial services industry, we've got regulators now supervising culture. You can have customers, certainly, and suppliers all looking at the culture of the organization and their experience of the organization. And these can be big levers when you're saying, look, you know, we need to, how we are on the outside is a reflection of how we are on the inside. So let's make sure that inside we have a healthy culture.
One theory I have about not just culture, but compliance in general, in terms of levers and places to look for risk for a lot of other things, is incentive plans. That's where people get told what they're rewarded for. Do you think incentive compensation plans can be used as tools, both good and bad, for affecting culture?
Well, I think they are certainly ways of screwing up the culture, technical term. But yeah, I think incentives, there are so many even well-intentioned incentive plans that are drawn up without thinking about unintended consequences can be a big issue. I'm not trying to plug my own work. I don't get any remuneration from this, but I did write a good practice guide for the IBE on performance management for an ethical culture. And that in there, we talked about incentives and also in ethical business practice. I think remuneration in general is a big topic, and it's one that's coming more and more to the fore. Both in a positive way and a negative way. If you don't focus on how people achieve their results and incentivize them by how they achieve their results, and just what, obviously, it's going to be a problem. So I think it's an area that we still haven't quite mastered, but it needs to be a focus of attention.
It just does come up a lot when the scandals happen. So, well,
absolutely.
Ruth, thank you for taking the time to share these insights with us. I want to thank all of you for taking the time to listen. I'm Adam Chittletaub from SCCE and HCCA. I hope we were able to expand your compliance perspective.